and it was peaceful in the Holy Land, I too decided to visit all of the sacred places there described in the Bible. And one day, after studying and photographing the area around the lovely Lake of Galilee, where it empties into the Jordan River, where John the Baptist did his teaching, I took the highway that swerves up into the green grassy hills toward the Mediterranean. And the highest hill is the Mount of the Transfiguration, Mount Tabor, that is described in today's gospel. It is about as high as the hills here across the highway. It's not really a mountain, but it's high in comparison with the other hills in the area. And as you might suspect, this mountain, Mount Tabor, the Transfiguration, was a special place for me because it is the anticipation of the Easter event, the resurrection. What happened at that moment to the body of Jesus for those three men with him foretells what resurrection means, how the energy of our own personal, mortal, physical body someday is going to be transfigured into another form of existence. It gives some idea of the translation to the transfiguration of each one of us who will follow into the future that Jesus promised his disciples and promised us. Now you must remember how difficult it was for the disciples of Jesus to even begin to imagine what it was he was talking about. That he told them again and again he would have to die before he could bring them everlasting life. They found it difficult to understand, and one day he told them the beautiful little parable about the grain of wheat. And he said, unless the grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it will always remain alone. But if it does die, then it's going to bear much fruit. In so many ways, in words, through the transfiguration, he was trying to help his followers understand that this mystery that we call death is absolutely necessary if there's going to be new life. Trying to teach them that the great God who sent him as the Lord of life is also a God who works through a process that is ongoing of death and resurrection, a Passover mystery. And this is the way our living God has chosen to bring new life into the world for all of us, not only through all of nature outside, but for each of us in a personal kind of way. He taught them and teaches us that unless he dies, they and we cannot experience the fulfillment that they long for and that we long for. He is teaching them that this death-resurrection process by which God works in our lives is absolutely necessary for all of us. This means that day in and day out, each of us dies to ourself in little ways and in big ways, to selfishness, to self-centeredness, in 1,001 ways in our lifetime. And that finally, each of us dies a physical death. I will die, you will die. Everyone that we love someday will die. But then follows the good news. The good news from Jesus is that the living God, his Father, is at work always in our little daily deaths to ourself as well as in our final physical death, in both. Always, so that little by little, we are able to grow in the risen life of Jesus Christ that he came to give us. The mystery is not only is this death-resurrection process necessary? But in reality, as we grow older, we discover that it is something that we should learn how to welcome, that we are not able to grow unless we welcome these opportunities little by little to die so that we can rise. It is the way, the mysterious, mysterious way in which our gracious God, who wants us to have, to enjoy a mature wholeness of life, this is the way God has chosen to act in our lives. This mysterious energy, this mysterious spirit that we call God, in whom all of us live and move and have our being, that spirit we call God is always participating in the mysterious events that we call the little deaths of our daily dying to self, all of which always bring about a little by little, step by step, resurrection until we are ready for the final death and the final resurrection. And these events take on hundreds of thousand different forms. But many years ago, I was a personal witness to one story, which is true. The story of a woman whose extraordinary love for other people supported her on a journey through a deep sorrow, a deep personal death to self that brought about a new life. The story begins in the early 1950s when Edith and Carl Taylor lived in a small town. And Edith was so sure that she was the luckiest woman in the block, in the town. She and Carl had been married for 23 years, and her heart would still skip a beat whenever he would walk into the room. And as for Carl, he gave every single appearance of a man deeply in love with his wife. If his job as a government worker took him out of town, he would always write Edith every single night and send her small gifts from each place that he would visit. In February of 1950, Carl was sent to Okinawa for a few months to work at a new government job. It was a long, long time to be away, and so very, very far away from Edith. But this time, there were no little gifts. But Edith understood. She felt, after all, he was saving money for that house that they had longed and dreamed about for so long. But the lonesome months continued to drag on, and each time Edith expected Carl home, he would write that he must stay another 3 weeks, another month, just two more months. And then these letters became less and less often. Then after months of silence came a letter. "Dear Edith, I wish there were a kinder way to tell you that we are no longer married." He had written to Mexico for a mail order divorce. Carl had married the Oriental woman assigned to be his maidservant. Her name was Nico. She was 19, Edith was 48. And though Edith's life was shattered, she did not crave vengeance. Even though she had died more than a little, she did not hate Carl. She still loved him deeply. And so Edith continued to write to Carl, and in time he wrote to her, announcing that his new wife had given birth to a little baby girl, and then a year later, a second girl was born. And Edith even sent the children little gifts and then continued to write to Carl. And Carl wrote back with news of the children, and then came the fateful letter. Carl had lung cancer and was near death. And his last letters were filled with deep anxiety about his new wife and the two little girls. His own personal meager savings had been used up to pay the medical bills, and Edith's response to Carl, finally before he died, gave him peace of mind, because she promised she would go on doing all she could to help him. Meanwhile, the little children were all that Nico had ever known. But Nico had no resources, and she wanted to offer more than the life that she had known of poverty and servitude before she had married Carl. And so in November 1956, at the invitation of Edith, she sent them to America to live with Edith. Edith had known it would be difficult at 54 to be a mother to a three-year-old and a five-year-old, but she felt alive again. But the story doesn't end there. Now Edith could read the loneliness and the sadness in the letters that continued to come from Nico. And finally, Edith knew that she must ask the children's mother to come and live with her too. And so in August of 57, Nico Taylor entered this country. And as the plane came in at our airport, Edith obviously had a moment of panic-stricken fear. What if she should hate this woman who had taken Carl away from her? And as she waited for the plane and the passengers, the very last person off the plane was a girl so thin and a girl so small that at first Edith thought she was just a child. And yet she called out the name, Nico. And the girl rushed down the plane steps and into Edith's arms. And as they held each other for a long time, Edith, as she told me later on, had an extraordinary thought. She said, I had prayed and prayed for Carl to come back home. And now he has. And his two little daughters, and now with this gentle little girl that he loved so much. And she prayed, help me, Lord, to love her too. And even though God has taken the one life that I loved so dearly, the Lord has given back three other lives for me to love. In the words of Hosea, come back to me. Come back to me with all your heart. Don't let fear keep us apart. Long have I waited for your coming home to me and living deeply our new life. That for Edith was reconciliation. That was death and resurrection, but resurrection three times over. That was what Jesus was trying to teach his followers. And on that hill of Mount Tabor, when Peter and James and John witnessed this awesome, awesome transfiguration of Jesus' body, he told them not to tell anyone until after the resurrection, until the Son of Man had risen from the dead. And then after the three disciples made their way down from the mountaintop, they asked each other what it means to rise from the dead, even though they already had an insight. They anticipated by what they witnessed what the anticipation would be like. And then it was that Jesus told them the story. Unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it will always remain alone. But if it does die, then it will bear rich fruit. Always, from death to resurrection, we will be raised I will be raised, you will be raised up by the resurrection power of the Lord. The words that we hear, come back to me, come back to me. Don't let fear keep us apart. Long, long have I waited for your coming home to me and living deeply our new risen life together.